Sorry, thought I was at the end. Jason Attic.
Just for today, tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program I will try to follow to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and have found a new way to live. As long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, so our second speaker and final is from the Vanderbilt area, Will S. I forgot the home group.
Come on, boys.
Hi, family. I'm an addict named Will. I don't even know where the hell it is he was talking about. The area is Vandergriff. It's in the Neyasna area, but the home group is Together We Can. And I don't know, man, my story is just about that. Like, you know, whatever I can't do, together we can. And it's been like that since I came to Narcotics Anonymous. I usually say, can we have a moment of silence so that I can get my ego and pride out of the way and invite a loving God to influence what I believe is our responsibility here, and that's to hopefully carry a message of hope. But I'm going to do a little bit something different today. Can we have a moment of silence so that we can remember one of Laurel Mountain Highlands, great. I don't want to do that. I don't want to put him on a pedestal and say greatest, but for me, he really epitomized what Narcotics Anonymous was. His loving, caring nature, never cutting anybody down, never making anybody feel like they wasn't a part of. I do believe he created the unity that is Narcotics Anonymous in his everyday life. So can we please have a moment of silence for the passing of Rich? Just for today. You know, I'll never forget. My clean date is February 20th, 2009. And, you know, so I was sitting right there, and I had one ear on Nicole while she was speaking. And my eyes were focused on a beautiful backdrop because, like, you know, the past 13 and a half years just was kind of like come flashing back. And all I could think about was the last time that I was in Canoe Creek. I was in a halfway house in Altoona, and they brought us down here so that we could go swimming. And, you know, and I could think about, like, where my life was at 6.5 months clean, you know, getting ready to leave the halfway house and, you know, to where my life is now. You know, I'm supposed to tell you, like, what it was like, what happened, and, you know, what life is like now. But, like I'm already starting at what happened, right? You know, I could really disclose like what it was like real quick for you. Like, I got high a lot. You know what I mean? To the point where my life was so destructive that like I couldn't care for anybody, let alone care for myself. You know, I was so selfish by nature that you know, all I could think about like you know, and you know, me and a friend of mine was talking about like how we used to like glorify where we're from, and like, you know what I mean? There's nothing glorifying about being from Baltimore, Maryland. Nothing. Like, really, everything it taught me growing up made me tough. Yeah, but like not tough in the sense of how life, I need to be tough for life. Like, it taught me tough about how to like use my bare knuckles to get through solutions, and that's never the solution. And I learned that here in Narcotics Anonymous. So, you know what I mean? Like, I had this fixed image of who I was. I believed that I was a drug dealer. I mean, I sold drugs my entire life, but I was never a drug dealer. Like, I've been an addict from day one. And I don't know, like, you know, because everybody, that's just my belief. Everybody says, like, where's you born? I don't really know what happened. You know what I mean? I just know that my mom and dad were heroin addicts growing up. And I knew that I was selfish. At some point, I started making decisions based off of the fact that I didn't want to feel how I was feeling because of the life that I grew up in. Whether it, you know, somewhere along the lines that after I come here, I realized it was the decisions that I made in life that caused me to have the problems in life that I had. It was not my mom and dad's fault, you know what I mean? And I stopped blaming them eventually. And thank God, because my mother is my best friend. I was just driving back from Yellow Creek State Park yesterday for the event that they were having. And I thought about, you know, because we always talk about, you know, our literature talks about like our members find this place where we belong when we find Narcotics Anonymous, that place we've been searching for our whole entire life. Like, you know, and through this, through these ups and downs and this bubble that is Narcotics Anonymous, like, I need to tell you, like, this fellowship is not perfect. This fellowship will let you down. The program will not, but this fellowship will, because we're fallible people. By nature, we're humans, so we make mistakes along the way. I am no different. You know, I am no different. You know, I was listening to Nicole, like, you know, what happened was, like, my life got so unmanageable that death sounded like a great idea, like I was a piss poor father, I didn't want to live like that no more, and, you know, and God resurrected me, man. Like, I started, like, praying to this thing that I didn't believe in, and, you know, and one day I got a knock at the door. You know that knock. You know, it's distinctive. No, nobody else knocked like that. You know what I mean? And it was a really bad or good night, however you choose to look at things, because, you know, perception's a mother, right? You know, I opened the door, nothing but boxers. And it was fresh in the morning, so you can imagine what it looked like when I was standing there like this. You know, can I help you? I knew who it was. They said, Mr. Sly, we got a warrant for your arrest. Thank you. My man. They even told me, man, on the way to the police station, man, they were like, I don't think we've ever seen somebody this calm. I was like, you don't understand. I prayed for you. I didn't even believe that fucker I was talking to, and I prayed for you. All I knew is the pain of living had gotten too bad. But like I told you, man, like, I was a punk. I thought I was a tough guy, but I was a punk because I remember looking for a place to hang myself, man, and I couldn't do it. I just didn't have enough guts. So I, like, went on with the pain that was going on. You know, and I share that because, like, it was funny listening to Nicole because, like, you know, I eventually got clean, man, and I went to rehab, and I spent 30 days in the rehab, and they sent me out to Altoona. I spent 6.5 months in Altoona. I spent it's a 90-day program. You know we fuck up everything. It's a 90-day program, right? And I'm there for 6.5 months. You know what I mean? Not by my choice. So I go to jail for something I didn't do. Oh, the irony. All these years, I've avoided jail. I mean, even arrogantly beat the court systems in court and you know, walking out. Because, you know, my dad might as well have been a lawyer. After 33 years in the Maryland State Penal System, that dude could pick apart the judicial system. He just couldn't do it for him, because every time they finally got him, he was so whacked out on dope, he wasn't covering his tracks anymore. But he used to tell me, man, the only thing he ever did as a father was tell me how to beat the system. And I beat the system just like him until addiction had taken over so far that I didn't even want to beat the system. I remember crying out for help so bad that I was begging them to not even take me to court. I was telling them, I'm guilty. Like, you're not listening to me. You are wasting taxpayers' dollars. Guilty! There's no reason to have a court hearing. Guilty! Send me! Because I just didn't want to live like that no more, man. And, man, thank God. God loved me more than I loved myself along the way. You know, I really need to thank God first and foremost for his grace and his mercy, man. The grace to maneuver me to a program that I didn't know was going to save my life, right? Right? The mercy to not give me the sentences that I really deserved, or the life that I really deserved, right? The grace to have me at a halfway house, man. And, you know, every tech there was a member of Narcotics, and well, all the ones that I identified with, the ones from the other fellowship, they kind of walked a little different, and I couldn't identify with them. But the ones from Narcotics Anonymous, man, I identified with them, and I built relationships with every last one of them. I became like damn near best friends with one that died, man. And for the longest time, I couldn't go to Altoona on Friday night, man, without tearing up. And I remember the first time they asked me to come to speak in Altoona, and it was on Friday night, man, and I walked down that long hall, man, and I broke down in tears, like, the whole way down there. Because, like, we had connected with something that I've never seen two people connect. And I remember, like, I was crying one time to him, man, and I told him, like, I was sorry. And he was like, for what? And I was like, because I didn't even realize when I was growing up I was racist. And he was like, yeah, me too. And I'm telling you, man, like, I loved that dude, and he loved me. And, you know, I drove up to Altoona. I live an hour and a half away from Altoona. I live, like, 25 minutes out of Pittsburgh. And I drove an hour and a half, like, to Altoona, like, every 2 days before he died, just to be by his bed. Because somewhere along the lines, man, you guys taught me how to be a good friend. So, you know, I went back to my section of the woods, and I remember, just like Nicole, man, like, you know, I remember, like, I was at a meeting that was at a rehab, man, and there she was. She walked by, you know, and I had about 11 months clean, and she walked by, and she was the girl of my dreams, and her hair was so curly, and she was so beautiful, and you know, and I knew that one day that I was going to talk to her, man. And then I went to drug court, and there she was at drug court. She was there too. And we had a kid together. This sounded like a great idea. You know, I ain't bounced this shit off of nobody, right? You know, and I'm grateful for her, man. I'm grateful for her giving me the biggest blessing I've ever had. In Narcotics Anonymous, and that's a living amends to the two that I wasn't the greatest father for that grew up. You know, and no, we didn't make it. You know, but and you know, I thank her for all the growing pains that we went through. I mean, you know, the physical violence that we went through, and there's a reason why I'm getting to this is because, like, the, you know, I need to tell you, from year 5 to year 10 was a black hole for me. I wasn't living, I was surviving. I was here and I stayed clean. And I remember after year 10, like, you know, I had taken a sabbatical from Narcotics Anonymous. I always share this, man. I gave probably the most brutal lead I've ever given in my life in Indiana. And I took a 6 months leave away from the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. And I went to Alcoholics Anonymous only for the simple fact that, like, I didn't want to come around people in NA that knew me, because I really wanted to take a deeper level with God so that I can get some understanding of why I would let other people's opinions of me influence me that hard. And I knew that, like, if I stepped away from a 12-step fellowship altogether, that I was doomed. And so I went to Alcoholics Anonymous until, like, you know, I had sit with God enough that, you know, he had me working on some things to where I could get some understanding of where I was, man. And I'm truly grateful. I'm truly grateful for the time that I spent with just God for them 6 months, man. Because it took me to a place, you know, and me and somebody was talking before the meeting, and you know, how they're on a journey to try to get a deeper level of you know, sitting with God and meditating, and you know, and I was able to share with a man that, like, you know, this is how it happened to me. You know, I don't know about anybody else's story, but I know, like, usually my biggest growth comes when I fuck up. You know what I mean? I have become a smart man in Narcotics Anonymous. I have yet to figure out how to be a wise man. I don't know why I cannot. Like, I cannot learn from your mistakes. I have to make my own. One day, I hope that I'll be a wise man and I'll learn from everybody else's mistakes so that I can quit knocking my head off the wall. But that's just not my story. You know, I just... God bless the past 4 years of my life. You know, and you know, me and Seth was talking about Rich, you know, before the meeting, man, and like, I've tried to model how I live this fellowship in my life after what I saw, because I believe our traditions. I'm a student of our literature. Me and Lance, we sit there and argue back and forth all the time about the literature, and I'm a student of the literature, and I really like to, you know, And I'm a student of the unity that I believe this program is founded on. And I'm a student of not being cliquish. And I'm a student of, like, we need to stop judging by what we look like. And we need to stop judging by how we dress. And we need to stop judging by, you know, maybe, you know, outside of Narcotics Anonymous, I wouldn't see myself hanging around you, because that's hogwash here. You know what I mean? And I believe it creates disunity to sit in cliques. And so I try to practice that in my life, that I'm not cliquish. Matter of fact, I don't know, you know, feel free to correct me, but when's the last time anybody actually even seen me walk into a meeting with somebody other than my son? Don't worry, I'll wait. You know, I'm about as close to to a loner in Narcotics Anonymous without being a loner in Narcotics Anonymous. And I think it's just because, like, I just skip to my own beat. I believe what I believe. I try to practice what I believe, and I just keep it moving, man. I used to get involved in all the hoopla, and trust me, man. It could be a double-edged sword. It can have you really ingrained in Narcotics Anonymous. But it sucks being a somebody in Narcotics Anonymous in an anonymous program, man. These people talk about your ass so bad, boy, have you, you know, I've learned to just be okay with self, man, and to just skip to my own beat and try to practice this thing as best as I can, and you know, and that helps me not isolate people. I never want to be that guy. I never want to treat people as if they don't belong, because this is a beautiful program, and this is a beautiful learning experience for people who you know, follow this process, man. You know, so I was sitting here, man, and looking at the beauty of this, and my life was flashing before my eyes, man. And you know, and that 5 to 10 year period where, like, you know, and I remember coming out of that 5 to 10 year period, and I remember having Narcotics Anonymous, the fellowship, at the top of my, you know, my 10th step that I was doing at that point, man. And I remember, like, you know, I can't go around the entire fellowship talking about I'm sorry, but what I can do is change the way that I practice the program. Right. So I can change the way that I follow these traditions in my life. And, like, you know, I was the guy who would judge you for judging. That makes a lot of fucking sense. Right. You know what I mean? Two wrongs don't make a right. So, you know, I had to take a deep look at that, and I had to stop that. I had to understand that, like, you know, if I'm going to walk a certain way, our leaders are trusted servants. Right. But leaders lead by example. It says we're not dictators. So, you know, somewhere along the lines, man, I started to view that, and, like, you know, the best way that I can practice this program, man, is in who I have at home. You know what I mean? Because how I walk as a man is going to influence how this 10-year-old walks as a man eventually, right? So, you know, my daughter just turned 19 yesterday, and, you know, and I always think about her whenever it comes to Narcotics Anonymous, man, because, like, I truly believe that she's what led me to Narcotics Anonymous, man, because, like, I remember being a certain individual that wasn't very flattering to the female persuasion. And I remember, like, you know, her mom giving birth to her, man, and I remember being at the hospital, man, and I remember holding her and instantly going, I can't treat women like this. And that started the process of me changing, man. It was far before I got clean, but there was something about this beautiful little baby, man, because I had a son before her. I got a 23-year-old son who's one of us. But, like, he didn't change my perception. You know what I mean? But holding her changed my perception of how I'm supposed to walk and talk as a man. And you know, which led me to Narcotics Anonymous, because like I always share this, man. Like I didn't come to Narcotics Anonymous to get clean. That's not my story. You know what I mean? If that's your story, that's fine. Like, you know, whatever, you know, I came to Narcotics Anonymous to change as a man. Thank God along the lines, man, you guys said that if I worked the 12 steps of a program, I could change the integrity of the man. I remember telling an individual of NA, and I said, you know, them guys from AA, because I had spent a couple years in AA, you know, in and out, in and out, in and out. And I remember him saying, like, you know, them guys in AA said, if I don't pull my pants up and change the way that I dress, I'm always going to get high. And I remember him saying, the one who died, he said, change the integrity of the man and the rest will follow. And I remember that sticking in my brain, man. And so that's what I tried to do. I tried to change the integrity of the man, and the rest kind of followed. I pulled my pants up eventually. You know what I mean? You know, I remember when I got here, man, I had a fitted hat, and I had it cocked sideways, and it was backwards. And you know what I mean? And I had an older gentleman of NA who kept saying, like, turn your hat around. And I remember saying, like, mind your business. How about that? You know what I mean? And I remember one day, like, my hat turned around. You know what I mean? And it wasn't because of him. It's because something had changed in me. Had nothing to do with him. Because it was probably 4 or 5 years after he told me that. Just something had changed. I remember there was a point in time where, like, I started wearing khakis and collared shirts and wasn't golfing nowhere. You know what I mean? Had loafers on and shit. And I remember one day looking in the mirror like, dude, what are you doing? This ain't you. You know what I mean? Me and Seth was talking before the meeting, man. The greatest thing we can do in the seventh step, man, is be who we are. Narcotics Anonymous is designed, the 12 steps are designed to introduce us to us so that we can apply the traditions in our life, right? So the 12 steps, the more that I went on, the more that I didn't feel the need to be what somebody else thought that I should be. I'm going to tell you right now, the chances of me where's he at? Right there. You're the one I'm trying to talk to. The chances of me ever stopping buying shoes are slim to none. We don't even have that in the step work. We're not putting it in the step work. We're not trying to recover from that area of our life. I like shoes. I like clothes. I like looking good. Let's move on. Period. You know what I mean? There was a point in time where it was a liability to me. There was a point in time where I did things far before I ever got high for new stuff that led me to believe, when I got here and did some step work, that I was an addict far before I ever used. You know what I mean? And I used to just blatantly share those things that I did at the open podium. It's not necessarily for the open podium, just for the day. You know what I mean? If you ask me about it, I ain't got no problem sharing it. I ain't got no problem sharing it up here. I'm just at a different place in my life. You know, and I'm just so grateful for where I am and where life has taken me. And, you know, there was a couple years, about 3 years back, man, like I started my own business. And I remember, like, me and Lance was talking about this. I don't believe the passage in the basic text that says fear is a lack of faith. I just don't believe it. I don't apply it to my life. And if I did, then I wouldn't be standing in front of you. I damn sure wouldn't have my own business. I damn sure wouldn't be the father that I am today. Only because, like I'm telling you right now, I am still scared to fail right now. As we speak, almost 14 years later, I am still scared of life. Life scares the shit out of me. I just keep walking. I just keep walking through the fear. You know, I remember 3 years ago when I started my business, I got scared, man. And the Carpenters Union sent me a flyer like it's God, right? You know what I mean? I get a flyer from the Carpenters Union and I go into the carpet. It was God, by the way. So I go into the Carpenters Union, and what happens is I've rounded out my skill set. you know. And a couple years later, I leave the Carpenters Union, and I'm going to do my own business. And, you know, I get a message from somebody, you know, who's in the fellowship, and he says, hey, Will, like, you know, we need a facility manager down at the Veterans place on Washington Boulevard. It's a Veterans Homeless Center. And there was a moment where it was like, man, that's a win-win situation where I could have consistent income and I could give back to veterans and help recovering addicts along the way, because they're also, it's also an addiction program. And you know, and I remember taking it, and about 8 months later, man, I remember sitting there, and God told me it was time to march. And I'm like, march where? Where is it you want to march? You know what I mean? I didn't understand. I didn't know. But for the first time, you know, in a long time, man, like, I marched. And I marched into my boss's office. And I explained to her that I was done. She said, what do you mean? Done. God told me. She probably looked at me, because she ain't one of us. She probably looked at me like I was mentally challenged. She said, what do you mean you're done? Well, God spoke to me and told me it was time to march. And she's like, this conversation sucks. And I remember leaving there and thinking, now what? And I get a call from the first speaker, who says, why don't you come to Dream Life and be a regional manager? You're perfect for the program. You know everyone all over the country in recovery. Like, this would be blah, blah, blah. And I remember she said, I'm going to call you on Friday. And, you know, all that good shit she shared up here, she's lying. She is not a good friend. She did not call me Friday. She, and I started my business on Monday. Back. See, God's beautiful, man. You know what I mean? Her human nature, because she got so busy because of what she does, caused her to not be able to call me. Or it just, maybe it just slipped her mind, whatever the case may be. She's not a horrible friend. That's a joke. You know what I mean? She was a busy woman, and it slipped her mind. But I believe that God intervened, because God had told me it was time to march. So I believe in my heart what he said was, you're not paying attention, dude. I said it's time to march. And I remember saying to myself, you know, this sounds crazy, but during the pandemic, I was laid off from the union. And I started DoorDash. And because it doesn't interfere with your money. And I started DoorDashing, and I started making like $500 a week easily, DoorDashing. And I remember when I resigned, man, and then she didn't call me, I remember saying, why don't I just give the business a try? Because if it doesn't work out, or if it gets slow, I could always DoorDash just to make ends meet. So I jumped in full force. I ain't DoorDashed since. Word of mouth and the fellowship and you know, by networking and by putting my work on Facebook and showing people what I can do. I don't know when I'm going to be slow. All I know is that God showed up for me and God told me to march. And for the first time, man, I marched. And, you know, not everything... Everything hasn't skipped a beat since, you know. So I think that I'm just in a different place with the way that I, and I was talking to that member, man, and I was telling him about how I'm just in a different place, man, where I'm just trying to, like, walk the way that, and that's what the 11th step is all about, man, walking a certain way that God's got us going. And it's about, you know, this not being about me. And I remember there was a point in time where I was sitting there thinking, like, you know what I mean? I'm really not that important in the big scheme of things, because this can't be about me. You know what I mean? What's it really about? And it's got to be about that, like, for me to come to Narcotics Anonymous and get a certain life, man, it's important that I don't leave. It's important that I continue to show up here, continue to show people what my life can be, good and bad. You know, because people can tell you, man, I walked through some bad around here and you knew it. You know what I mean? You could tell by the way I was living and the mistakes that I was making. I was walking through the bad. And I'm not one to justify, like, you know, addict behavior, but not getting high. But this is what I do know. The program in Narcotics Anonymous has taught me that, like, if I don't get high, I don't set myself back. So I have a chance to keep moving forward no matter what I got to attend to later on in life because of my actions. And that's where I was, man. Like, I didn't get high, and I walked through all that pain that I was going through, and it all started from the separation of that girl. And it all started from the pain because, like, I didn't leave her because I didn't want to be with her anymore. At some point, God had spoken to me, and I didn't realize it until I did some step work later on in life. God had spoken to me and said, she don't love you, she don't want to be with you, and she does not have the ability to leave you. And this has been evident for 4 years. And I left. So people didn't understand why I was tormented. But I was tormented because I didn't leave her because I didn't love her. I left her because I knew she didn't love me. And it was the hardest thing I ever had to do, man. Thank God we're best friends now. I can honestly say that I'm best friends with both of my three kids' mothers. For all the turmoil that we went through, I sent them two and my mom a message on Facebook letting them know that me and the kids appreciate everything they do. And the one that I had the turmoil with, that's one of us, replied back, "No, we appreciate everything you do." And that was the defining moment for me, that it let me know that I'm back to being on the right path. You know, I got 13 and a half years clean, but I think I got about 6 years recovery. Because at some point when I got with her, my recovery had stopped, and me, Debo, and hers had started. And you know, and this is the one thing that I know. I don't never tell nobody to stay out of relationships, but this is the one thing I know. Even the great ones derail you. So be careful. Be careful, because even they can be the biggest blessings, you know, you've ever come across, and they're going to derail you. It is selfish to be with another individual and to not think of that other individual. So at some point, you have to think of that other individual, and it will derail you from the progress that you need to make. That's my story. I'm not really trying to tell anybody what they should and shouldn't do. I just trying to explain to you what my process was and where it went wrong. And but I'm still grateful for it. You know, I'm still grateful for those 5 years of dark times, because now I got a ton of experience on not getting high no matter what. You know what I mean? We say slogans around here. But what happens when your ass is falling off and you're in the no matter what program, but, like, you know what I mean? It's just a program on Facebook. You know what I mean? What happens when your ass is falling off and your life is coming unraveled, and the pain is so unbearable that, like, getting high sounds like the only solution? You know, what are you going to do? So I have a ton of experience. I got a ton of experience on what not to do during that situation. But I have a ton of experience. And so for that, I'm grateful, because that's all we have, our experience, strength, and hope. And I'm truly blessed for where Narcotics Anonymous is taking me, and where I've been already, and the experiences that I have because of it. And if you knew me before now, or if you're just meeting me, you know, for the first time, please allow me to reintroduce myself. I'm an addict named Will. Thanks for allowing me to share.
All right. I'm acting Tyler.
Hi, Tyler.
Guys, Will, thank you. On behalf of the committee, thank you everyone who came out and supported. Also, can we give the committee a round of applause? They did great. All right, can we circle up?
Yeah.
The committee won all the prizes. They already got their round of applause.
That's crazy.
Don Rickles should have
started. I don't know how. Oh, yeah.